from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Wojtyn.
Good morning, everybody. It's the G and Ursula Show. Ursula, what's good?
Happy Wednesday. It is April 17th already. You know how we always say time flies when you're having fun?
Yeah.
This month of April has been flying on by.
You know what? Yeah, you're right. And so has this year, if you will, right? Yeah. That's a good point.
I know.
So it's April 17th.
Is 2024 just that much better than 2023 was? I'll answer real quickly. Yes. Okay, still ahead, we are going to be talking about this NPR editor who dared to criticize his employer, and now there is an update about his status. So we're going to get into that and see if he was in the right or his employer was in the right. But right now,
what's new at 10?
So on a daily basis on our show and in our newscasts, we hear about horrendous crimes, but there is some good news to report this morning on that front. So homicides in Seattle and other major U.S. cities have actually dropped this year after big jumps during the pandemic. Seattle, for example, had 9 homicides in the first 3 months of this year compared to 14 during the same period last year. That is a 36% drop. Tacoma has seen a 40% decrease. Nationally, even, the news is good. The homicide rate has declined by nearly 20%. And at this pace, it could actually match its level in 2014, when many cities saw 30-year lows in violent crime and homicides. Mm-hmm. Again, after you hear of all the crimes being committed still, it's still too high. But again, we're seeing some declines in specifically violent crime, specifically homicides. It's hard to say why violent crime is down, but a spokesperson for Tacoma PD at least thinks this push to hire officers born and raised in the city has been a big help.
Okay. Now, instead of me coming into this topic, just weighing in and throwing all these different points, I want to sit down and all of us have a discussion. The question is, Texas, why? Why are we seeing the decrease? 888-973-5476. Why are we seeing the decrease, not just here locally, but on a national level? Why is this happening? Now, during the pandemic, and we saw the huge increase, I want to remind everyone what I was told. I was told then that we're losing police officers. That's why we have more crime. Okay. I was also told about liberal policies. I was also told about how this is what happens when Democrats are in charge. I was also told about the lack of family structure, all of the different reasons that I was given for why there was a huge increase. So my question is, today we are still dealing with shortage with law enforcement. Is that true, Ursula?
Yes.
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 We still are. Local and national. We still are having, if you will, Democrats run a lot of the big cities in the country. So if the same reasons as to why there was a huge increase are the same reasons are why there's a huge, slight decrease now. That's my question I want to ask. I believe that the reason for the increase in the first place was the impact of COVID. It was police officers in a situation where they weren't stopping people. There was a lot of stuff that was going on. The reason why we see downtown, we saw the graffiti, we saw the encampments, we saw a lot of things where downtown looked different when we came back from the pandemic. I think a lot of the reasons that we had so much of an increase in crime had to do with the pandemic. But I'll ask you.
And I want to point out, and you'll ask me. What? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So what I want to point out again, we're saying something very specifically when it comes to violent crime, specifically homicide.
Yes.
I mean, there are other areas where crime is skyrocketing, like car theft and juvenile crimes.
No doubt.
And so there are areas where it's still bad. And even as it's decreasing, I mean, I'm not happy hearing that there were 9 homicides in the first 3 months of this year. Those 9 homicides too many in Seattle. So it's still bad. You know what I mean? We're just looking at it compared to what has been happening. What is the trend overall?
Okay.
So, but you wanted to ask me.
I'm asking
what
you and, everyone else. Well, because the same reason, but I was accurate, right? Because when it was a huge increase, people used their platform to tell everyone this is why.
Yes, which is why it's dangerous. It's much easier to have those conversations. You and I talk about this a lot off the air. It's much easier to go to the same talking points and pull out the same talking points instead of having a much more nuanced conversation where you have to actually dig a little bit deeper. And it's not just so easy to say, well, it's this, this, or this. In general, what helps bring violent crime down is to reduce poverty, to improve neighborhood living conditions. I mean, this is research that has gone into it. They say to change male socialization patterns, specifically looking at male, many of the crimes are committed by men.
True.
Expanding early childhood intervention programs. This is something that you've talked about, whether it's after school programs, whether it's someone pointed out yesterday, Catherine, one of my favorite listeners, said, encourage people to go get a job, get a part time job. That keeps you busy. That keeps you from having all that idle time. Mm-hmm. Now, it is harder to get a job again right now. But and the other thing is improving schools and schooling. Yeah. Those are all things that help bring down the crime level. Now, you know, in the case of Tacoma PD, I believe that with Tacoma PD, they're saying that it helps to bring neighborhood cops back. Mm-hmm. You have talked about that, the importance of having those beat cops.
Right.
Right. The officers who know the neighborhood, who come from the neighborhood, establish relationships early on and maybe are deterring some crime.
Right. I want to go back to what you said when you start answering these very serious topics that we all talk about collectively, together, constantly, because these things impact all of us in some way, shape, or form. When you use these canned responses that are coming from someone who uses their platform or uses these talking points to get votes, when you do that, this is why I don't like politics being in a way of real issues, real solutions to issues. And so when you have those talking points that you give, and so the same thing, well, the crime's happening because we don't have the police officers. That's what's happening. We don't have the police officers. That's why. And so you still don't have the police officers, but crime is decreasing. So here's my next part of the discussion. So I would assume that if we see a decrease going into next year, what will be the reason for that? Right? Because I think it's going to be the same thing that happened in the mid-90s, all the 90s, and into the early 2000s, we saw crime through the roof, especially homicides, right? And then, because I know when I lived in Chicago, 1992, it was a record breaker. We had nearly 1,000 homicides in 1 year. And then it got to the point where you start getting into the 2000s where it got down to 400s. By the way, there should be no homicides. I'm not saying that, but I'm just talking about the huge decrease. So we saw how it could happen. I do believe it can happen again when we coming away, the further we get away from the pandemic.
360 just texted in and says, no, there's no drop in crime. There's a drop in reports. I've not seen evidence of that, but, you know, if that's the case, then we need to report that. But that is not what we are being told.
There's unreported murders happening all the time. We're just not hearing about.
I can tell you that that's not the case. And we're talking specifically about violent crime. See, shoplifting is probably just through the roof.
But I saw that. But we saw that with COVID, right? Because it's like when you don't like the news or you don't like the results, you know, January 6th, when you don't like the news, now you want to try to change the game. Right? Yeah. Now it's, oh, well, the reason why the numbers are that way is because they're not reporting it right.
So, but when the news fits your narrative, right, then it's okay. It's almost like, you know, voting and like, oh my goodness, there's cheating when it comes to voting. But yeah, wouldn't that be on both sides?
Yeah. I think that's the problem, and that's what we're trying to fight on this show. So I will again point out, we're not talking about property crime. We're talking about specifically homicide and violent.
It's funny seeing the reasons come through on the text line.
I know, right now I'm just like, oh boy.
Someone says it's because we have a prosecutor who's a Republican who's tougher on crime. Well, the city attorney does not prosecute.
The city attorney does not deal with felonies.
Yes, I mean.
See?
But I know. But that's human nature. And okay, we'll just move on.
Is it? Wait. Hold on, whoa. Is it human nature?
It is human nature.
To do what?
To try to make justifications all the time. And to try to make it point to your narrative and your point of view. We're just trying to fight that.
I don't know about that, Ursula.
Yeah.
I don't know. You think that we...
Tribalism today is more prevalent than ever. We all want to go into our little silos.
But it's not natural for you. It's not natural for you to try to fit your narrative of what you think.
No.
You and I might disagree.
Because I have 37 years in the news business where I force myself to fight against my own bias.
But like when you and I disagree on something,
yeah,
like there might be a topic that we disagree on.
Yeah.
You'd be like, okay, gee, we're just going to have to agree to disagree, yes, and everything like that. But you might have an opinion, right?
Yes.
But you don't take facts and try to
squeeze
that and turn it around to try to help you out. Like, if the facts that you give, they will be the facts, right? And even you'll use the real facts to come up with your opinion. I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem when people have talk shows in the world, right, nationally, and when people try to turn the facts around and they try to use that to fit,
yes,
the narrative. That's the part that bothers me, and I don't think that's normal.
I hear you.
I don't think that's normal.
Yeah. No, that's normal for a talk show host. Okay, I want to point out that my lawn has never looked so beautiful and green, but I know it's going to be short-lived.
I thought you were doing an advertisement there for a second.
No, no, it's going to not last very long. And the reason I'm thinking about that is because the State Department of Ecology has declared a drought emergency for most of the state, with limited exceptions for parts of Seattle, Everett, and Tacoma. And the Ecology Department's Carolyn Mellor says precipitation is less than 90% of normal. Snowpack is just at 63%. And mountain snow has already started to melt.
That means that water runs out to the ocean too early and then is not available at the times that it's needed later in spring and summer.
So, of course, we're talking about less water for drinking, less water for watering your lawn, less water for wildlife, and then also add to the mix, bad air quality is going to be plaguing the Seattle area for 3 full weeks this year, according to the experts. And so we were talking about it this morning. Does summer anymore come with an asterisk for you? Like when you think of summer, summer in the Pacific Northwest.
Whoa, no, not until I'm doing a pre-show meeting with you two. And what I mean by that, I'm being serious. Like I was this morning, Chef, you talked about seeing daylight. It's funny. I opened up the garage this morning, and when I came out, it was like, oh my goodness, it was daylight.
The heavens.
You know what I mean? And I thought, wow. So I was already in a good mood. As a matter of fact, when I opened up the garage, I was like, you know what? I'm going to drive this. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, I'm feeling good today. And then we're doing the pre-show meeting, and then you guys wanted this to be a topic. And then, Ursula, you're like, hey, shouldn't there be an asterisk next to the summer because our air quality and this and that? And I was thinking to myself, I thought I didn't have to worry about that until at least like late August.
Well, the reason you have to think
September.
About it is right now, for a lot of things that you want to do in the summertime, you have to make reservations. A friend of mine yesterday was telling me that you got to do these reservations at Mount Rainier now, reservations to do the ferries for the San Juans,
mm-hmm,
and you got to do a lot of planning. And then I was thinking about, what do I love to do in the summer? I love to go to Lake Chelan. The last 3 summers in Lake Chelan have been smoke shows. It's been full. Just, we have to work around the wildfires.
I mean, gee, it was like the middle, late June, I think, when we had 108 degrees here in Seattle. And I feel like we got a pass last year because I was just waiting for it. Like, OK, we're going to hit 105 at least. And the air quality was pretty good. We had a light wildfire season. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to this year. Like, yeah, because I don't have air conditioning in the house. So if there's a month where it's miserable, you want to go camping, you're not allowed to have a fire anywhere in the state anymore during the summer. It's like, things are different.
Can I give a life hack right now?
Yes.
It's April 17th. I want you to put it on your calendar. Go get you a small little portable air conditioner somewhere right now. Don't wait until it's hot. Don't wait till it's the day before. Go get it right now. Go get it right now. It's going to be a little cheaper. It's a sweet spot right here. But if you wait until that day before, Ursula.
Try to get the most environmentally friendly type, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the cheapest and the coldest.
I don't know.
If I can find storage for it for the other 50 weeks a year.
Oh, boy.
Can I share a text with you before we go?
Yes.
360 says, as having multiple family members in law enforcement, I can assure you that Seattle PD, their hands are tied. They can't enforce the law, or they're scared to enforce the law because some yo-yo will have a camera out screaming police brutality or some other form. They just need to let the cops do their job and not have them be worried if they decide to enforce the law, if they're going to get fired soon or thrown in jail. Now, Ursula, real quick, you know, you have a lot of relationships with law enforcement, as you guys know that I do as well. What do you think about that text message, Ursula?
Okay, I have to keep it a buck.
Okay. Go ahead.
I had this very conversation just a few days ago, mm-hmm. and it's not entirely wrong.
Their hands are tied?
Were their hands tied when they waited 20 minutes to respond to a shooting? They were handcuffed then?
Are
officers who do not feel like they can do what they should be doing in downtown Seattle. Yes.
Okay, what's that?
Arresting people for openly using drugs right in front of them.
Oh.
Don't we have a law about that?
Yeah, but they still don't do it because they've been told not to. This is what I'm being told.
Oh, this is what I'm being told. That's news.
Because I've been seeing the arrest reports come in.
So I know on the Gene Ursa show, we reported that they are now supposed to be arrested. But now there's law enforcement being told not to actually arrest them? Oh, that's news. Know that.
I wasn't planning to talk about this. You asked me a question.
I did.
I have to answer.
I did.
How I've been told by some who work in law enforcement.
All right. Good stuff. Coming up next on the G and Ursula show, NPR suspends their editor who criticized his employer. We'll talk about that next. G and Ursula.
This hour of the G and Ursula Show is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors.
This is the G and Ursula Show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on this Wednesday morning. As always, we invite you to join us on our Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Also, I just saw our podcasting numbers. And I'm not happy where we are in our standing as far as compared to other shows on Cairo. I want to be number one. So can you help us all out? Check out our podcasts when you get a chance. If you've missed any segment of our show, go on to any platform where you can listen to podcasts and take a listen to our show. And if you can, also leave us a review. It would certainly help us out a ton. And that's just me being competitive. Okay, but let's talk about this NPR editor, because NPR has now suspended this veteran editor after he posted this long essay criticizing his company for being too progressive, for embracing a progressive worldview. And his name is Yuri Berliner, and he says that NPR has lost America's trust by telling all of its listeners how they should think. And he pointed out that back in 2011, 23% of NPR's audience was conservative compared to only 11% today. And he accused his employer of focusing too much on Donald Trump and not enough on Hunter Biden, for example. And he said that the company took a hard line on systemic racism that he doesn't agree with. I mean, it went on because it was a, a 3,500-word piece, and it was for the anti-establishment publication, The Free Press, and I think he also went on to Fox and criticized his employer. But am I wrong on this, or did other
Chris
people?
Chris Hayes' show.
Okay, yes,
yeah,
he was on some show because I was. It was during our show that I was looking up. I was like, wow, this guy's really going at it. Mm-hmm. In any case, NPR's editor in chief was pushing back against his characterization of NPR, telling staff in a memo that network management strongly disagrees with his assessment of the quality of their journalism, and they say that other NPR staffers publicly rejected his assessment, but he has been suspended for 5 days without pay. Is that appropriate, or does it go far enough, or does it go too far?
Well, they're saying there's rumors that he might have resigned since then. But anyways, okay. First, if he has a problem with his employer, an opinion that he thinks if he has that problem and he's gone on and wrote about it and op-ed about it and goes on, does any shows about the company and he feels that way, no, I think he should be protected and should not be suspended. I believe that. But I don't know what their company policy is. There's probably, right, like, so for an example, I know we have policy here at Cairo, right? We have rules in which...
Yeah. If we did that, we would be
yes.
out of work.
Yes. So I'm giving my opinion. Even though I don't know what their rules are, I still think that he should be protected.
So in a written letter notifying him of his suspension, the network said that he did not first seek approval for work in other outlets, as is required by NPR.
Right.
So if you're going, if you are going to write something criticizing your employer in another publication, yeah, and you don't have... You don't give your own employer. I'm surprised he still has a job.
Right.
Now, honestly,
I want to say this. I've only been doing this 10 years. Okay. You've been doing this longer than me. I want everyone to know that never, never since I have been here, and you guys know I was a car wash guy, right, not one time has anyone told me how to think about a topic. So, if you don't like what I say, understand this is all of my own, and I can't blame anybody for it. That's number one. Like, I can't do it. Number two, I just want to make this one point, and it has to do with Donald Trump. And I kind of let out some frustration with you guys this morning, and I want to say it now. Here's what frustrates me. The fact that on our show, we make it a point to avoid Donald Trump topics. And the reason why is because, I'm going to speak for myself, it puts me in a bad mood. And I actually think that when we talk about Donald Trump topics, I think it puts you, the listener, in a bad mood, whether it's good or whether you agree or disagree with it. So that's why we stay away from those topics, because really it's not good for the show. Because if you are a Donald Trump supporter, okay. And if you're not, okay. Either way, we still want you to listen to the show because we have a lot of things to talk about. And no matter what you agree with or disagree with, collectively, we're going to solve some of our problems here locally together.
Yeah, there's some certain things that we cannot avoid in talking about Donald Trump. He is the front runner for the Republican Party. He is a former president. So we do it, but we know that, and you already know as an audience, that G and I are not supporters of Donald Trump.
No.
So, again, we look at it as like, okay, how do we win? So we have to give you the news that is pertinent and bubbles to the top, but we're not going to use our show every single day to bring up Donald Trump.
Imagine if we let off the show, we says, oh, hey, Ursula, did you hear Donald Trump fell asleep in court the other day? Like, that's not... Like, nobody wants to hear that.
Well, some people do, but no one is... What I want to make sure everyone knows is because there is this feeling like our bosses tell us what we need to talk about. Our bosses tell us the slant that we have. It's the liberal bias of the media, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things about Cairo Radio is that we always call about... describe our station as the big giant tent.
Uh-huh.
You get all sorts of viewpoints.
Yes.
Even with a show, you get all sorts of viewpoints. You might think that we lean a certain way, but on any given day, you and I will disagree on a whole bunch of stuff. Right?
Yes.
And we make a point of trying to, if we know that all of us are on the same page, that we try to bring up other counterpoints.
Mm-hmm.
That said, in a case like this, I mean, is NPR known for having a certain bias? Yes. Is NPR a news organization that is respected amongst many circles? Absolutely. They do really, really well. Is it okay for someone who works for that company to go out to competing companies and badmouth their employer? I have a hard time believing that there'd be very many employers who would be okay with
it. You know what really bothers me about this? Is this whole thing that we have to attack any publication that has a bias, right? But it's only when it's the New York Times or NPR or the Washington Post or Seattle Times, something like that. A truly biased publication would fire people who have opposing views. And I know, like, national radio hosts who've lost syndication because they weren't pro-Trump enough. Yet NPR has not fired this person.
I think, right? NPR is
what
being
does that
extremely
say?
Generous.
What does
to
that
this
say?
Person?
Like, Fox is kicking people out the door if they have any kind of liberal perspective.
Hey, here's one. I won't respond. Yeah, I'll let you. 425 says, yet management primarily hires liberals to host most of the shows here.
Okay, can I tell you, we're going to pull back the curtain. The one piece of advice we got for our show when we first started.
Go ahead, tell them. Tell them.
The one piece of advice that we got from a previous PD, program director, mm-hmm. was make sure that you include a prominent Republican perspective as much as possible.
Yep.
I won't say, but yeah, make sure that you have the Republican perspective. That's not what the directive that we're getting right now, but just know that she and I had never done a show together the day before we were going to launch. Yeah. That was the one piece of advice that we got.
But
because people said, the fact that you're black, the fact that I'm a woman, an Asian American woman, they're going to automatically assume it's a liberal show.
And before we get out of this, why do all of a sudden, why do just people just assume that, like, you're liberal and I'm liberal? Why do they just say that? Like, do they just say?
Well, I think we are more liberal than many conservative. I try to call myself a radical moderate.
Am I liberal when it comes to the death penalty?
No. No. No, but in some areas you are very liberal, and you are. So again, compared to what?
It's like being I'm a vegetarian, but I eat pork from time to time. Are you a vegetarian or not? All right. Scenarios next, Gino.
Scenarios is brought to you by 1-800-DUI-AWAY.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Okay. I saw this on X, formerly known as Twitter, Ursula. Wife is a bridesmaid. Their wife is a bridesmaid in a friend's destination wedding.
$2,000 to attend a bachelorette party, $1,500 for the bridal shower, and another couple hundred dollars for a dress. Altogether, spending around $5,000 as a participant in this wedding. I believe that this is a terrible thing to do to your friends, and you know what? I don't see why my wife should continue on with this. Your thoughts on this topic? 888-973-5476 is the Muckle Shoot Casino Resort text line. Ursula, you up to bat first.
I do see, especially now with destination bridal showers and big fancy bridal showers, and I see that happening more and more, and I see where people are complaining more and more online about having to shell out a bunch of dough to show support for someone who's getting married. Mm-hmm. And I think as the future bride, because this is what we're talking about, right?
Yes.
So as the future bride or the future groom, if you're going to have that bachelor or bachelorette party and you're going to make your desires known, try to consider people's budgets. And if you're going to be asking for something extravagant, you should shell out some of the money.
Yep. Agree.
And also, if you are asked and you cannot do it, instead of grousing and then grousing publicly about it, just say, you know what? I love you and I want to support you, but I cannot be part of your bridal party because I can't afford it.
Yep.
Well, that's perfectly okay.
It's hard for people to tell people they can't afford something. Chef?
I hope you enjoy your long future of going to swanky auctions and galas with your future wife, because clearly she only wants to be surrounded by a certain class of people. Because that's literally what you're saying if you're requiring a $5,000 buy-in to participate in this wedding. It's one thing if, like, you have a buddy who can't afford, you know, an extra $10 for a drink at this place. It's a different thing entirely if your level of entry is $5,000. Get out of here. I don't understand why people do this.
Yeah. You know, if you're going to get married soon and you're going to have a destination wedding, I'm just going to make this very simple. If you plan on having groomsmen and bridesmaids and all that stuff, then I think you should be prepared to at least supplement some of the money for the expenses. I mean, you can't be just asking folks to just come all the way out of pocket and you guys fly out here. You should do something for them. Like, hey, thank you guys for coming. I'm going to pay for your hotel stay, or I'm going to pay for your dressing. You got to do something for them. You can't just be like, see you there. This is how much it's going to cost. You got to do something.
Agree.
All right. Nick, what do you got?
This just smells really bad to me. I'll make it quick. I'm getting out of this thing before my wallet goes flat. I want to break. Give him like a toaster, some petty cash or something, but don't require all these loopholes to get to the wedding.
That's very simple. A lot of destination weddings these days. That's got to be a phase. I think that's got to phase out soon. Because what ends up happening is it becomes more expensive just collectively for everyone. People are part of the wedding.
That and then the wedding itself.
Yeah.
It's just getting out of control and anymore. I just had this conversation with a friend yesterday about how our kids are going to have such a hard time buying a house. Well, buying a house, paying for a wedding, it's like runaway cost.
Yeah. Foam coolers. Do you have a foam cooler? When you go to the grocery store, do you ever get a foam cooler? Well, I'll tell you about the future for those next in Agree to Disagree. Gene Ursula.